I love kids' stories, and I heard this one this week, and I thought it was appropriate. The story of Adam and Eve was being carefully told by a Sunday school teacher one Sunday morning, and following the story, she wondered how many kids really got what happened to Adam and Eve. So she asked them all to draw a picture that would illustrate the story a little bit. So little Bobby, he drew a picture of a car with three people in it. One man in the front seat and a man and woman in the back seat. She was a little perplexed by the whole picture and everything, and she asked him, said, what was the explanation? And he said, well, you said you want us to draw a picture of God driving Adam and Eve out of the garden. You'd think that after all of the stuff that Israel had been through since God created Israel and all of the trials and tribulation that they went through in wandering the desert, being held captive by their captors, fighting and being defeated, turning to God, turning away, turning to God, turning away, you would have thought that their history might have been a little bit different. You would have thought that once they were delivered, they'd probably think, hey, this is pretty nice. But they didn't get it. And neither do a lot of people today get it. People don't know what path to go down. Because I think people are looking for an idol that will bring them peace and joy and satisfaction, as did the Israelite children looking at that golden calf, and it just didn't really happen. You would have thought that all of the things that Elijah did, that they would have made him some type of hero and some type of leader, but he had no interest in that. Ahab was an interesting character, and we talked a lot about Elijah, but Ahab, he goes to Jezebel, his wife, and tells her all the things that have happened. He talked, you know, and she, of course, she's aware of the famine, she's aware of the lack of rain and all of those things. But rather than saying that God did that, he says it was done by Elijah. And Elijah did it. And the thought that went through my mind this week is, how many people do you know that have had a vital relationship with Jesus Christ, and something's come along and changed it? Something's come along and they've lost that relationship because of something that has occurred in their lives. You've had them. I've had them. We all have. Could have been devastating, but we chose not to do it. And I believe that life is a series of choices. And we could choose to run like Elijah did. Because when Ahab told Jezebel what had happened, she goes looking for Elijah. And you can read this in the 19th and 20th chapters of 1 Kings. But he goes running and goes and hides. And it's amazing that all the things that God had done to lead him, he ends up in saying, I wish I was dead. All the things that God had done in his life, and that's the one thing that he looked for, was death. Because he was scared of Jezebel. And I don't know how many times we've said, it's not how big the mountain is, it's how big is God. Because the mountain is nothing more than just a little spot in somebody's body that's going to do no harm. So Elijah had hoped to die, and what happens is God wakes him up and tells him to go out in this cave, go outside this cave, and he looks around, and God's there, and he provided him food and provided him everything that he had did. And the thing that God did for Elijah is the same thing that he'll do for us. Remember he fed Elijah with the ravens, by the ravens? He had the widow feed Elijah. He kept him alive for 40 days as he wandered around, I'll just say aimlessly. We cannot go anywhere and be out of the sight of God. Elijah couldn't hide in a cave and be out of the sight of God. It just didn't work. John was on the Isle of Patmos and couldn't be out of the sight of God. And that was one remote island, but he couldn't be out of there. So when God encounters us with a situation, what do we do? Do we make excuses? Sometimes that happens. The sooner we recognize it, and that's why I pray the prayer at the end of every service. Because there might be something that happened that, we just think it's okay. But the sooner we realize that there's something in our lives that is amiss, that's altering our relationship with God, the best thing to do is say, "Hey, Lord, I missed it. I did something wrong. I need your forgiveness. Restore me. Take me back where I was because it was so great." Or do we blame others? Isaiah, he was pretty good about blaming other people. He blamed the Israelite children for what he was doing and why he was running from Jezebel. So what do we do in our situation? What if we've been in that situation that Elijah had placed himself in? What do we do? I mentioned John and the Isle of Patmos earlier. Sometimes we have to go to that Isle of Patmos. Sometimes we just have to go and be alone. And I know that we all like to be around people. We all like to have friends and fellowship, and that's okay. But when we get ourselves in that situation, we've got to go there. And it may be a situation that we would be better off if we never let ourselves get there. And I think that's a choice too. Life is a series of choices, whether we really want to admit it or not. So here's the real secret, I think, of getting through that. There comes a time in our life that we have to remove ourselves from everyone and everything. Some people call it a day of Sabbath or a Sabbath day or a sabbatical where you just get away. Get away from everything, get away from everybody. Situations in our lives that require us some type of mental discipline that we have to get away and just be with God. There's going to come a time in your life when advice from a family member is just not good enough. Advice from a friend sometimes is not good enough because sometimes people get too close to you. It's easy for me to tell people, if I'm not familiar with them, what they need to do. And I don't mind being blunt, honest, frank, and candid with people. Because if we're not, and we can do it gracefully, but sometimes if we're not, people have no idea where they're at. So there needs to be a place where we can go and we can seek answers that God's got for us, and it is that Isle of Patmos. It's not the isle itself where John was that's 20 miles long and 10 miles wide. That's not what it is. What I'm talking about is a place that we can go into the mountain and we can be alone. We can be by ourselves. Sometimes it's just going, sitting in a park, trying to figure things out, trying to see what's going on. It's a place where you go and see God's face. I know 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, "If my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, and I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. And there's nothing more, and I've mentioned this before with the election coming up, there's nothing more than we need in this land than the God to heal it. It's amazing that I turned, well, when I turn it on, I'm not a network TV person. If it's not on ESPN or the History Channel or the Animal Planet or A&E, I probably, I've told you I don't watch it. But every morning when I turn my computer on, up pops MSN, which I equate with CNN, which I have no use for either one of them. But they're there. And so you read these things, and there's that. I hardly ever see anybody say what I'm going to do. It's put somebody else down. I don't need that. That's when sometimes you just need to get away. You need a place to go that it's just you and God. Where the television's off. Where the cell phone's off. Where it's quiet and you can talk between you and God. There's a song I heard, and I thought it was interesting. The songwriter wrote these words. He says, steal away, steal away, steal away. Steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. Steal away in the midnight hour. Steal away when you need some power. Steal away when your heart is heavy. Steal away to Jesus. Steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. Steal away home, haven't got long. Sometimes when you have to steal away, it's just you and God, and gives you an opportunity to seek His face for some real answers. I'll be honest with you, going to the Isle of Patmos is not easy. Because you're going there for a reason. You're going there because you're hurting. You're going there because you need power. You're going there because there's some pain or suffering in your life. It could become a time of fasting. And I've mentioned Hezekiah before, but Hezekiah became ill to the point of death. Now, I don't know about you, but if someone come to me and said, hey, Larry, you better get your things in order, your house in order, because tomorrow you're going to die, I guess I would be glad for the notice, but I certainly wouldn't be glad for the message. But that's what Isaiah said to Hezekiah. He said, this is what the Lord says, put your house in order because you're going to die. You will not recover. Hezekiah was devastated by that news for two reasons. Number one, he's like all of us. He wants to live. I like it here. Does that mean I'm not looking forward to going to heaven? No. In spite of all the things I say about Cindy, I like living here with Cindy. I love pastoring this church. I couldn't think of anywhere else I'd want to go. Cindy has two words for that. Somebody asked me. I will not tell you what the first one is, but the second one's no. You can figure the first one out on your own. The second reason is that if you look at the Old Testament covenant, God promised people temporal prosperity, including their length of days. And we see a lot of people in there referenced as length of days. But Hezekiah did a little bit more than that. He wasn't ready to give up his days. So he goes to his Isle of Patmos and he says, Lord, I've walked with you and you told me to walk, and I'm asking, why is this for me? Because I've done all the things that you've asked me to do. So I kept a higher level of integrity towards you, and I served you faithfully. I can just see him saying, hey, God, what's up? So I kept the highest standards of morality. Now you're telling me to get my house in order? Didn't I do what you instructed me to do? Didn't I follow what you told me to do? Hezekiah knew when he had God's face and he had God's ear. Because God said to him, okay, I'll give you 15 more years. Now, I don't know if there's any, you know, I don't see any reference to the Bible anywhere. At the end of that 15 years, he looked for more. But he found God there. Using my spiritual imagination, I would say that Hezekiah had everyone leave the room, walks up to a wall, and just starts praying. Because he wasn't going to give up. He didn't have time to go to the synagogue. He didn't have time to go to some chapel. He didn't have time to go to the tent, to the temple. He did it immediately wherever he was. James 5:16 says, therefore confess your sins to one another and pray to each other that you may be healed. The prayer of righteousness of a righteous man is powerful and effective. And even the King James says it so I can understand it. It says, confess your faults one to another and pray one for another that you may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. We all have to go to that Isle of Patmos. Sometimes our wives are just driving us crazy. Sometimes husbands are driving their wives crazy. Sometimes our kids drive us crazy. Anybody have that situation? Sometimes our friends and relatives are acting crazy and we have to get away. Sometimes your health begins to fail. We have to go to our Isle of Patmos. Sometimes our jobs are frustrating and we go to the Isle of Patmos. Sometimes we lose our mothers or our fathers or our children to death and we have to go to the Isle of Patmos. There's probably not one situation in there that hasn't said, I need to go to the Isle of Patmos. And I need to get some things straightened out. While Hezekiah was praying that time on his Isle of Patmos, I can see hope. I can see faithfulness. God had never departed from Hezekiah during all of his life. He was always with him. He could have cursed God and died. After all, that's what Job's friends wanted him to do, but he wouldn't do it. The other thing that's important is that your present condition is not your conclusion. Now, I think that's something to keep in mind. Where you are right now and where you think you are right now may be two different situations. No matter what your condition is, it's not your conclusion. Drugs may be your condition, but it's not your conclusion. Alcohol may be your condition, but it's not your conclusion. Pain may be your condition, but it's not your conclusion. Abuse may be your condition, but it's not your conclusion. Unemployment may be your condition, and that's the condition of a lot of people. But it doesn't have to be their conclusion. Divorce may be your condition. And I've been in that condition. But it certainly wasn't my conclusion. Unemployment, sickness, abuse, lying, a lot of different things can be the condition. But they're not our conclusion. Our conclusion is far better than what we can ever imagine. Because we've got a God that says, if you'll go to the Isle of Patmos, like Hezekiah, like John, I can reveal some things to you that you won't even imagine. So where you are is not where you can end. And one of the things that come to my mind this week as I was looking for this is we're all soldiers in this fight and in this battle. But the battle belongs to the Lord. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to Him. God bless you.